Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to spend the next half hour with Mark Tooley and Pastor James Heidinger talking about some decisions taken yesterday in the United Methodist Church on the issue of homosexuality by their judicial council. These are significant, and they may indicate a direction, a future direction, for this once the largest of the mainline Christian churches in the United States. We'll talk about that for about a half hour with those two guests. And then, from 4:30 to 5, some reaction to the Alito nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. All seems to be going as one might expect. The reactions are coming in pretty typically. We'll hear some of them, a bit from the White House as well, pro and con, and a little bit from the nominee himself. So we'll be doing that for the next half hour, coming up in about 25 minutes. Your questions and comments are welcome during that half hour of open lines as well. In the last hour of the program, which is actually just three quarters of an hour, Dr. Nathan Jastrom is going to join us. We'll talk with him about bioethics and the image of God. What do the two have to do with one another? Quite a bit. And we will talk about that coming up in the last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. Now, coming up very soon is our Issues Etc. book of our Issues Etc. 10th anniversary. Sorry, folks, I'm doing production in the middle of the program. Our Issues Etc. 10th anniversary banquet. I'm looking forward to this. There are people coming from all over the country for this, and it's just a great surprise. But for 10 years, Issues Etc., our nationally syndicated edition, has been a mainstay for many people in the United States, hearing a Christ-centered and cross-focused theology that maybe we simply take for granted. So people come from all over the country to celebrate with us 10 years of Issues Etc. This is really a celebration of the message, and a thanks to all those who have helped us get that message out, both our listeners and the guests who will be with us that evening as well. For more information about our Issues Etc. 10th anniversary banquet, seating is very limited. We only have a few seats left, but you can still get in. 314-505-7836. It's this Saturday night. 314-505-7836 is Jenny Williams' number. The banquet is $50 a plate. Come and help us celebrate. As those of you who have listened for so long and supported us, our Issues Etc. 10th anniversary banquet. Larry Rast is going to be the guest speaker. I'm looking forward to seeing him again, as usual. Go to our website for more information, issuesetc.org. To reserve a place, call Jenny at 314-505-7836. Mark Tooley is a regular guest here on the program. He's director of the United Methodist Action Committee for the Institute on Religion and Democracy based in Washington, D.C. He joins us along with Pastor James Heidinger, president and publisher of Good News Magazine Reform Group within the United Methodist Church, to talk about these decisions of the Judicial Council of the United Methodist Church on the issue of homosexuality. Mark, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you again.
And Pastor Heidinger, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Mark, let's start with you. Outline, if you would, for us, the decisions that were made yesterday in the Judicial Council, and what do they mean for the United Methodist Church?
Well, it was a bonanza day for rulings regarding the church and homosexuality, and it was a fairly good day for those who are on the Orthodox side of the church in terms of affirming traditional Christian teachings. The two major rulings were these. One was involving a Philadelphia area pastor, Beth Stroud, who was openly involved sexually with another woman and was defrocked by a church court last year. That defrocking is overturned in an appeals committee earlier this year, but then the Judicial Council reinstated her defrocking, enforcing the church's prohibition on clergy being sexually active outside of marriage. The other major ruling on homosexuality involved a Virginia pastor who had an actively and publicly homosexual man active in his congregation and going through the membership process. And the pastor was counseling that man, but said the man was not yet ready for membership. The bishop of Virginia ruled that the pastor was incorrect in not granting membership to the actively homosexual man, and the Judicial Council in effect overruled the bishop and said that local pastors do in fact have some discretion in terms of whom they accept as members and are not obligated to automatically accept anybody immediately who applies for church membership, as the Bishop of Virginia seemed to imply by her response to him.
Pastor Heidinger, what's your general reaction to the decisions taken by the Judicial Council in the United Methodist Church?
Well, these were, as Mark said, these made for a good day yesterday when we heard about these rulings, because it meant that our Judicial Council, which is like our Supreme Court, made decisions that upheld our church standards that over the last 10, 12, 15 years have become more solidly supported by the denomination. We have a good biblical position supporting the traditional view about homosexuality. But the important thing is a church must uphold that and enforce that standard. And there are people that get discouraged thinking that people get away with winking at the church's standards and bypassing them to do what they choose. These were good rulings. We think they were right, and they should send a real sign of encouragement, will be a real encouragement to United Methodists across the country.
Now, you mentioned here enforcement, and that has struck me. I'm glad you mentioned that, because while I was listening to Mark's response, I was thinking this really is kind of, among other things, the problem in the United Methodist Church or many other church bodies as well that are struggling with the issue of homosexuality, especially in the clergy. Not so much what they put on paper, but a willingness to enforce what the church says it believes and what it says ought to be practiced. Is that a pretty good assessment there, Mark?
Yes, it is. Virtually all churches on paper have orthodox teachings on theology and on sexuality topics. But in the main line, there has been increasingly reluctance to uphold those doctrines, not just in recent years, but I would say over the last century, just sort of culminating in the debates over homosexuality. And we have situations in all the mainline churches where the official doctrines, by and large, are scriptural, but the permanent bureaucracies and much of the leadership of the official of the mainline churches are very, very reluctant to uphold those teachings because they contradict their own personal theology.
Pastor Heidinger, do you agree that the reluctance to enforce what the church says and what the church puts on paper with regard to its teachings and practice lies largely with the leadership of this church?
Well, I think you could make a case. I think it does. We know that about 70% of United Methodists describe themselves as conservative on moral and theological issues. Now, that's a strong core of people that are basically traditionalists in their moral and theological views. But we end up, as a denomination, at the top with a national leadership that does tend to be more liberal, and there are different reasons for that. But what it means is that we have a number of our leaders that are reluctant to enforce, who have a different view, and even some of our bishops who have vocally spoken out that they disagree with the church's standards on homosexual practice. And this is quite egregious to us, because a bishop is responsible for bringing into effect the policies of General Conference, not being a vocal dissenter of those standards.
How do you respond, Pastor Heidinger, to those who say that taking away, let's talk about Beth Stroud if we could just for a moment, that taking away her credentials to practice as a minister in the United Methodist Church because she's a practicing lesbian amounts to discrimination?
Well, it a church is a voluntary covenantal community. You don't have to belong to a particular church. You choose to belong to that church. All of us who are ordained, before we were ordained, were asked certain questions. Have you studied the doctrine and polity? Do you agree with it? Will you teach it in your ministry? And those of us ordained said, yes, we would. So it's a matter of basic honesty and integrity, that of something that we agreed to before going into the ministry. And then to turn around and to violate that covenant seems to us a real breach in the integrity on the matter. We just need to be straightforward about what we promised we would do as clergy in the United Methodist Church.
Mark, other than just a reluctance for enforcement, Do you think that there is an impetus in those who advocate for ministers like Beth Stroud and this Virginia pastor, or members being welcomed without pastoral discretion into congregations, regardless of their homosexual orientation and lifestyle, do you think there's an impetus to challenge what the church, what the church's position here through these high-profile cases?
Well, obviously there is. Beth Stroud is just one of several high-profile cases over the last 7 or 8 or 9 years. And I guess you have to give her credit for being courageous enough to follow through on her convictions, whereas others prefer to talk big but not follow through. So clearly there is somewhat of an orchestrated campaign to attempt to circumvent the clear meaning and intention of church law. But at least in the case of the Methodist denomination, it appears that by and large the legal process is working, and there is the political will to uphold the church's teachings on this issue.
What do you think, Pastor Heidinger? Do you believe that, and it's happened in other churches, kind of test cases, trial balloons, to see whether or not a church is going to stand by and enforce what it has on paper?
Well, Beth Stroud was pastoring a church that was supportive of her stand, and after she had her credentials removed, that church still allowed her to remain on staff as a lay minister. So it wasn't as risky for her. The consequences weren't as dramatic. But we do think it was a test case that, much like the political process nationally, if something can't be won through the legislative process, that is, through our general conference that meets every 4 years, then there are efforts to challenge the system and take it through the system of the court or our judicial council. And that's what we're seeing in society. It's also what we're seeing in the church. We're not winning legislatively. Let's challenge the system and see if we can win through court challenge. And that's why this is encouraging to see. It was challenged, but our standards were held.
We're talking about the decisions yesterday by the United Methodist Church's Judicial Council on the issue, two cases of homosexuality, and how they were decided. Mark Tooley is our guest, director of the United Methodist Action Committee for the Institute on Religion and Democracy in Washington, D.C. Also, Pastor James Heidegger, president and publisher of Good News Magazine. I'm Todd Wilkin, and this is Issues Etc. In about 15 minutes, open lines. We'll be listening to some of the audio gleaned from the news on the Alito nomination, coming up in about 15 minutes here on Issues Etc. Did you have doubts, Pastor Heidegger, in the midst of this, when she had been defrocked, and then the local council had overturned the defrocking? Did you have doubts as to the direction of your church?
Well, no, I think we expected that the judicial council, as they looked at the facts, we felt they would sustain the trial court. She had been given a fair trial. There was an attempt to protect her rights. It was done properly. And we felt that the appeals committee that overturned that court perhaps had their own biases and prejudices and did not deal fairly with the facts. So I expected that the case would sustain the trial court's verdict, which it did.
Mark, Beth Stroud was very open. Especially after the charges were brought, but very open, never really kept anything a secret, although she did not talk about her homosexuality at the time of her ordination. Are you concerned about the many or the few who may not be as open or forthcoming as Beth Stroud, who are serving in parishes in the United Methodist Church?
Well, I'm sure they're out there. I believe there are 35,000 some United Methodist clergy, just here in the U.S. alone, and more than that overseas. And I'm sure you would find all kinds of sins and imperfections out there. That's always been true, and that will always be true. And I don't think you can expect the church to attain any state of absolute perfection. But I do think it's important for Orthodox believers to strive for making sure the official teachings of the church are in conformity with what the scriptures have to say, and that we ought to, when challenged by those who willfully and publicly challenge those teachings, we need to respond as we did in this case with Beth Stroud.
Two members of the council that made these decisions were in effect, writing a dissenting agreement. Right. I don't know if it would amount to a dissenting agreement, but in part they wrote, "We do not disagree with the legal analysis of our colleagues, although we deeply regret the outcome. While the Judicial Council must be faithful to its charge from the Church, we are also sensitive to the hurt, pain, and brokenness of the family of God." Pastor Heidinger, what is this two-person dissent saying here in this statement?
Well, it just reminds us that in the life of our church, there are persons, even at the leadership level, whose own personal preferences and convictions are not supportive of the church's standard, which we think is consistent with 2,000 years of church teaching and with the biblical position. So we know that's out there. It's not a surprise to see that. And they look at this as perhaps something that's harmful. There's a flip side to that. This issue has become very divisive and harmful for many people that love their church and are having local churches torn up by people that are pushing this agenda, the pro-gay agenda. So there's hurt on both sides. We can't follow our feelings. We've got to follow what's the clear biblical teaching.
Pastor Heidinger, how do you think the decisions taken by the Judicial Council will be received by the average United Methodist parishioner?
Oh, I think they're going to be welcomed. Again, our general conference last year sustained our present standards by votes anywhere from 72% up to 80, even 83%. At the grassroots, we are a basic town and country, middle America denomination, and most of our folks, I believe, will feel positively about these rulings.
Oddly enough, Mark, I received an email either today or yesterday from a listener, and they had been listening kind of belatedly to a conversation that you and I had recently on this issue. They'd listened in archived audio on our website. And they wrote to say, I think they were a member of the United Methodist Church, that, now look, the person you talk to represents a fundamentalist streak in our church and does not represent what United Methodist Church is really all about. I'd like you to respond to that, if you would, Mark.
Well, very often those who are on the liberal side of the spectrum will portray those on the Orthodox side as being fundamentalist, which has lost its original theological meaning and is now just a pejorative term that's used for attack. But those of us who support the church's teachings on this issue simply support the official doctrines of Methodism as they are currently stated. They have been framed historically for 200 years, and more deeply than that, the historic consensus of the Christian church for, as Jim mentioned, 2,000 years, and of Judaism before that. So it's not any kind of new innovation or development. It's simply a repeating of the same old teachings that the church has always had.
A question for both of you then, first for you, Pastor Heidinger, and then for you, Mark. How significant are these decisions taken by the Judicial Council in the future direction of the United Methodist Church? Are we watching a direction being set, a vector for this church, away from, for instance, the direction set by the Episcopal Church USA? For you, Pastor Heidinger.
Well, I think that we are very encouraged by these decisions because they do become precedent in church law. Judicial Council decisions give important precedent, and I think it does reflect what we've been seeing over the last 15 or 20 years as the more conservative and evangelical constituency of this denomination have been getting involved at the national level, at the general conference level, making their voices heard, whereas prior to that, we were more likely just to have the conservatives stay and work in their local church, but not make their voices heard. So I do think it speaks of a trend that we're encouraged by.
Mark, same question for you.
Yes, what was that question?
Well, how significant are these decisions taken by the council? Do they represent a direction, a definite direction for the United Methodist Church in the future, away from where, say, for instance, the Episcopal Church USA seems to be heading on the issue of homosexuality?
Well, they're an affirmation and reiteration of what the church has been debating for the last 30 years. But I think that those who want to change the church's teachings on this issue, their support probably peaked in the mid-1990s, and the pendulum has been moving fairly consistently in the more orthodox direction. And I strongly expect that's going to continue if you look where the church is growing and where it's declining. And so I'm, unlike the Episcopal Church or some other mainline denominations, I'm fairly hopeful about where Methodism is heading.
Mark Tooley, thanks for being our guest.
Thank you. Always enjoy it.
Mark Tooley is director of the United Methodist Action League for the Institute on Religion and Democracy, based in Washington, D.C. You can visit their website. It's ird-renew.org, ird-renew.org. And Pastor James Heidegger, thank you for being our guest.
Good to be with you.
Pastor Heidegger is president and publisher of Good News Magazine. Their website, goodnewsmag.org, goodnewsmag.org. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. Here we are at the very first day of the book of November. Is one that I've been chomping at the bit as soon as I found out it was coming out to make one of our Issues Etc. Books of the Month. In fact, I think we bumped something for this one, if I'm not mistaken. It's called Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions. What it is, you've heard us talk about the Lutheran Confessions before. This set of writings from the 16th century compiled by the original Lutheran reformers to set out in a definite and solid way what it is they were saying and what it is they weren't saying, what it is they believed and taught and confessed, and what it is they rejected and condemned. This was all assembled into what is called the Book of Concord, the Lutheran Confessions. And now it's been newly, it hasn't been revised. That's the good thing about it. It hasn't been revised. It's been newly translated and put out in a reader's edition. Now, what's a reader's edition? A reader's edition is, this is pretty daunting stuff at times, and you need to get the context. You need the history. You need a little help understanding who's who and what is the issue they're arguing about again and why were they arguing about it. That's what this edition of the Lutheran Confessions, Concordia, a reader's edition of the Book of Concord, what it does for you, the reader. This is genuinely aimed at the layperson. If you want to know what the Lutheran Reformation was really all about, this is the book. It's not just a book. This is the book. And 700 pages for $20.99. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November, Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions. Find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Or you've got a half hour now today, or any weekday during regular business hours, to call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Just ask for Concordia, and they'll know what you're talking about and mention Issues Etc. It's our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November. 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. When we come back, we've got audio. Various people, some from the Senate Judiciary Committee, reacting to the Alito nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court. I'd like to hear from you, your reaction. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That's how we're going to spend the next half hour. What do you make of this newest pick from the president? Now that Harriet Myers is in the past, how do you see the future with Alito in her place? We'll be right back.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you noticed how Sunday morning church has become more like the Oprah Winfrey Show? Pews filled with mostly women, music focused on subjective feelings rather than objective truths, preaching that sounds more like therapy than theology, and pastors who are afraid to take a stand. Is there still a place for real men in the church? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to visit Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. For more information, check out their website, www.ctsfw.edu, or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155. 800-481-2155. Real men attend Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, www.ctsfw.edu or 1-800-481-2155.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Christian conservatives are ecstatic over the Supreme Court nomination of Samuel Alito, the quick replacement for beleaguered nominee Harriet Myers, seems to have returned President George W. Bush to the good graces of evangelicals in his party. Terry Phillips has the story.
The mood among Christian conservatives is upbeat and confident on the heels of the Alito nomination. The left quickly pronounced him a radical and out of the mainstream. Focus on the Family's Bruce Houskonek says the liberals' goal is simply to malign the nominee.
It's now all about the goals of the liberal left wing of the party, which include abortion, same-sex marriage, secularization of society, etc. It has nothing to do with the judge's qualifications and judicial temperament.
Wendy Wright of Concerned Women for America urges the Senate to ignore the liberal rhetoric and consider Alito's qualifications.
People need to look past the code phrases, the inflammatory language, to look at what is really being talked about. Sam Alito has a good record of being a strict constructionist, of being a strong believer in the Constitution.
And Congressman Trent Frank says if liberals want to oppose Alito based on politics, it's time they are challenged on those arguments.
It's about time that liberals who have no respect for the Constitution have had to defend that in open public debate. And I think the last thing they really want is a fight on this nomination because it's going to expose what they've tried to hide for so long.
Calls for comment from liberal groups and Senator Harry Reid's office were not returned. For Family News and Focus, I'm Terry Phillips.
Judge Alito is a member of the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, considered one of the more liberal in the nation. Alito is its most conservative member, and he has ruled in favor of parental consent and public displays of religion. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Science seems to be moving at breakneck speed. How can Christians make ethical decisions on issues like stem cell research, abortion, and euthanasia? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, inviting you to join us for the Image of God Bioethics Conference, Friday, November the 11th at the Sheraton Westport Lakeside Chalet in St. Louis. For more information, go to our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. regular guest Wesley Smith is one of the featured speakers. The Image of God Bioethics Conference, November the 11th in St. Louis.
If you've ever wondered about the issues that were the basis for agreement and disagreement during the Reformation, we have a book for you. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for November is titled Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions, a reader's edition of the Book of Concord. You can find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 or look for the cover of Concordia, the Lutheran Confessions on our website, issuesetc.org.
After Harriet Myers withdrew her name from consideration on Thursday, the president very much had in mind Judge Alito as someone that would be a very capable and distinguished person who could fill this vacancy. And so the president was very much focused on him.
That's Scott McClellan, press secretary at the White House, describing, well, a bit of the thought process going into the president's latest Supreme Court pick, Samuel Alito. Well, what do you make of this pick? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Now, many were disappointed with the previous pick, Harriet Myers. And that disappointment was made loud and clear to the White House. Her nomination withdrawn and a new one made pretty quickly. We're going to be hearing some of the reaction here in this next half hour of Issues Etc. And I want your reaction as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Were you among those who were alarmed by the Harriet Myers nomination? And among those at the same time now relieved by the Alito nomination. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I was just watching a little bit of television last night. I had an opportunity to see they're doing these retrospectives on Hurricane Rita. And they're talking about how much still needs to be done. And part of that feature was people in New Orleans in certain neighborhoods, trick-or-treating. And the neighborhoods they were trick-or-treating through after Rita's devastation. You know, there are still neighborhoods where it's just piles of junk and rubble down there. The water's gone, but everyone's lives are still a shambles. And people who are still displaced and still need help. Lots of help. Add on top of that, Hurricane Wilma and then Alpha and Beta in various other places. Lots of people in various places need your help. LCMS World Relief is taking the kind of help these people need and connecting it in a real way to the message of the cross. Their concern is not only for body, but also for soul. LCMS World Relief underwrites issues, etc. You can donate to help in hurricane relief by calling 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. That's the toll-free number for LCMS World Relief, or find their logo at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for LCMS World Relief right there, issuesetc.org. All right, your reaction, along with the reaction of the likes of Senator Durbin and other members of the Senate's Judiciary Committee to the Alito pick. I've heard people saying, great pick, marvelous pick, almost as good as John Roberts. Of course, there's going to be a bit more of a fight, and many are concerned. Among them, Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois. Here are some of the issues that he's concerned about regarding the Alito pick.
Some fundamental questions: the right of privacy, one of the most basic personal freedoms in America, women's rights, civil rights, particularly this week as we consider the legacy of Rosa Parks. I want to know where you stand when it comes to workers' rights, protecting the environment.
He's got a long list there now. Now, that's a list. Let's just give the senator a bit of credit here. That's a list that anyone ought to be concerned about with any judge, right? He might be raising those issues in order to kick up some sand with regard to the Alito pick, but those are legitimate issues. We should want our Supreme Court justices to have the right viewpoint and the right judicial philosophy on all of those issues. What's your reaction to the Alito pick? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Senator Durbin again of Illinois talking about the favorable reaction from conservatives to the Alito nomination.
I think it's instructive that the same extreme element of the Republican Party that managed to oust Harriet Myers last week is jubilant this week with the nomination of Sam Alito. What do they know that the rest of America doesn't know?
Now, people were complaining to the White House. There's no doubt about that. But there were some who were supporting Harriet Myers. And we talked about it. Dr. James Dobson was very supportive of Harriet Myers after he'd had a conversation with Karl Rove. And he made it public on his radio program that he supported her, that he knew enough about her to support her nomination. He's backpedaled a little bit since she's been withdrawn. So it was not uniform religious right opposition to Harriet Myers. Certainly not. But are you among those who are elated now with the Alito nomination? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Here's Bob Edgar of the National Council of Churches. He also notices the positive reviews on Alito from many in the religious right.
He has selected someone who may be much more of interest to the radical religious right than those of us who are moderate to progressive faith leaders.
Now, the National Council of Churches, just to give you your bearings here, the National Council of Churches represents largely the mainstream of American liberal Protestantism. So Bob Edgar is not altogether thrilled with the Alito nomination, and he thinks that this is the president pandering to his base. Do you agree with that? I'm as puzzled as anyone at the president's pick of Harriet Myers. But do you think that this is the president swinging the pendulum back the other direction? He promised when he was elected that it would be his nominees, if he had the opportunity to do it, would be of the ilk, and these were his words, of Scalia and Thomas. As far as we can tell, Alito fits that mold more or less. So I don't know if this is kowtowing to his base. His base was certainly upset about Harriet Myers, but I don't know if it's kowtowing to his base when he promised, when he was elected, that this is the kind of judge, if he was given the opportunity, to do it. Here's Bob Edgar again of the National Council of Churches. He's simply not pleased with this choice.
I would have preferred the president to select someone along the lines of Sandra Day O'Connor as opposed to Scalia.
Well, and that's what he kind of did the first time. Or, I don't know if it was Sandra Day O'Connor, not of her caliber, but he chose someone that was middle of the road. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. What do you think about the president's latest pick for the U.S. Supreme Court? This is, I think, genuinely rare that a president not only gets two picks in the course of a year, but three. I think that's a rarity. So three bites at the apple, and many people are saying the second one was, I heard someone say on the Sunday morning show, every president deserves a mulligan. You know what a mulligan is in golf? A mulligan is when you aren't the golfer you claim to be when you're sitting in the clubhouse, and you prove it by taking a bad shot, and a mulligan is a do-over. It's one of those little golf traditions born on the third grade playground. I get a do-over, and he says every president deserves a do-over, a mulligan. Here's Senator Patrick Leahy of Vermont. He's a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. He is also not impressed with Alito's judicial record.
His opinions from the federal bench demonstrate that he'd go to great lengths to restrict the authority of Congress to enact protective legislation to protect in the areas of civil rights, consumer protection, the rights of workers, consumers, and women.
And here again, Senator Leahy says that President Bush, he's got a similar list to that of Dick Durbin. Here, Senator Leahy says that President Bush should have chosen a minority for this position. After all, this nominee will replace a woman. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. It's open lines, issues, etc. I'd like your reaction to the president's latest pick. Everyone else is weighing in. You can too. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. All right, we just heard from Senator Leahy. He's on the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's significant. These are the men who will pass this nominee out of their committee to the General Senate for approval. They're going to be looking hard. This is where the hearings take place. And Leahy has a concern about Alito's sex and his race.
There were a lot of highly qualified women, highly qualified African Americans, highly qualified Hispanics, and other individuals who could well have served as unifying nominees while adding to the diversity of the Supreme Court.
Unity in diversity. That's what I hear. We want a diverse Supreme Court that will unify the country. Now, we had a pretty good Supreme Court that was all male for a long, long time. I think it's a good idea to have women on the court, but not just for the sake of having a woman on the court. That doesn't make any sense. And we still do have a woman on the court. What's your reaction to the pick? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk with Robin, who calls from her car. Hi, Robin.
Actually, it's a he. Sorry, Pastor Todd.
Oh, no, you'd have to be sorry for being a he.
It's the old guy, Johnny Cash song, Boy Named Sue.
All right.
A comment is, I guess I got a question to the Democrats. What did they think they were going to get by turning down Myers? I mean, obviously, they had somebody potentially middle of the road, yet they rejected him. And as you made the comment, the new Supreme Court judge elect, he's staying to a promise, as you said, that he made to the conservative base. He made a pledge to the campaign. He didn't direct it towards a conservative, but that was part of his campaign.
Thank you very much, Robin. I appreciate it. Well, yes. Two things. First of all, I don't think it was so much the Democrats that rejected. At least my reading of it was not the Democratic side that rejected Harriet Myers. They were pretty happy with her. They had questions about her, but they weren't really very vocal on her qualifications, because they saw her as exactly a nice trade out for Sandra Day O'Connor. And many people did. But the president had promised. You know, when he said, I will appoint justices in the ilk of Scalia and Thomas, he was saying that that the Supreme Court, if there's a vacancy there, the Supreme Court's complexion might change in the direction of Scalia and Thomas. And that was a campaign promise. I want to hear from people who think that Harriet Myers got a bad rap. that she was set up and mistreated. I was watching Saturday Night Live the other day, and they did a little skit with someone playing Harriet Myers angry because she'd been mistreated. Do you think she was? 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Now, here's Karen Pearl. She's the interim president of Planned Parenthood. And she just comes out and says it. She says Alito, the president's nominee for the Supreme Court, is anti-Roe.
We are very concerned that he will either totally overturn Roe or he will continue to gut it and make more and more and more restrictions possible under the law.
So she's concerned about Roe. That's what they pay her to do as the interim president of Planned Parenthood. And there is some evidence in what this, I mean, he's been sitting on a lesser court for a long time. And he's got a lot of law under his belt and a lot of decisions under his belt. He's argued cases before the Supreme Court, and he's weighed in terms of, in his capacity as a justice, with decisions that do indicate he is willing to see abortion curtailed. Karen Pearl says, no, it's going to mean the overturning of Roe. She also says that Judge Alito, the president's pick, is anti-woman.
We know a lot about his judicial philosophy. We know a lot about his rulings, and we have the concern and the right, I believe, to be concerned that he will rule in ways that put women in greater harm.
Now, this is you have to react to this kind of rhetoric. We just talked sometime, well, maybe a couple days ago last week, with, she was the author of one of the chapters in this book that assesses 30 years of Roe. And she said, look, women safer after 30 years of legalized abortion simply isn't true. That was, she did a great job of dispelling that myth. It is not true. There's less concern in the abortion clinic about safety now that it's largely unregulated than it was before it was legal, when doctors who did it were very careful because they didn't want to get caught. Here again, Karen Pearl of Planned Parenthood on Judge Alito's anti-women views.
Well, it's very clear based on his record that Judge Alito does not support women's health and safety as it relates to abortion, that he is not willing to strike down really onerous laws.
Okay. The onerous law she's talking about, husband being informed when his wife is having an abortion. That's one of the things he was unwilling to strike down. He was unwilling to there was a law saying that a husband does not have to be informed, and he said, no, that's not constitutional. The husband should be informed. Now, the court went against him, but his decision in that was, no, a husband, when his wife is having an abortion, should probably be informed. He kind of has 50% of a stake in the baby in her womb. Our call-in number is 505-7850-1-800-730-2727. Charles calls from Chesterfield. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, good afternoon, Pastor.
Yeah.
Would like to comment on the selection of President Bush. First of all, I guess I would feel a little bit of tinge of sadness that Harriet Myers had to go through this, but I guess that's politics, and I think it was on the basis of qualifications, and I guess that's legitimate in the political realm. Anyhow, on that pick, I would guess, in my opinion, that any pick of President Bush would be contrary to the Democrat far left faction, if indeed they're pro-life in any way or form or fashion. And statement by, I think it was Leahy, said that he would wish that he would have picked a moderate, kind of like a Sandra Day O'Connor, so it should unite the country. Well, Sandra Day O'Connor has been sitting in that post for a long, long time, and we're more divided country now than ever before, so I think that's a red herring. Another thing is that President Clinton appointed and got an okay with the Senate for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, probably one of the most left-leading justices on the court, and why not, for the sake of fairness, equality, have the same liberal approach to voting in Justice Alito. So that's my comments.
Thank you very much, Charles. Very insightful, especially that second point you made about the second point that you made there about this nominee and the pick here. Well, I feel sorry for Harriet Myers, too. I mean, who would want to go through that? But there are a lot of things at stake. I'll tell you what, regardless of who is being laid up for the nomination, it does show us one thing. The debate is abortion. Anyone who says abortion, it's settled. This country's united on abortion. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. By no means. 30 years after it, it is still a controversial decision. Roe is. Here again, Karen Pearl. She's interim president of Planned Parenthood, and she's talking about her goals for the confirmation process of Alito.
We will be working to make sure that the questions get asked of Judge Alito during his nomination process so that it becomes clear to the American public just how extreme his anti-choice views are.
I agree with her. I agree with her completely. Ask the questions. Or in the words of Ted Haggard, let's have some lively debate. Let's talk about abortion. Rather than using code for it and talking about women's rights and women being harmed, let's just talk about it and see where the Senate Judiciary Committee lies with it. They're going to be the one who pass him out. Where the Senate lies with this and where this nominee lies. Ask the questions. I think a pro-life nominee to the court should not have to worry about answering those questions. Not because they won't be asked, but because they will be asked, and they should not worry about expressing their viewpoints on this. It is the debate. So let's hear from the nominee himself, Judge Samuel Alito. He talked about the responsibility, first, of judges.
Federal judges have the duty to interpret the Constitution and the laws faithfully and fairly, to protect the constitutional rights of all Americans, and to do these things with care and with restraint, always keeping in mind the limited role that the courts play in our constitutional system.
Now, that's the statement that many are looking for, which is the limited role of the judiciary. One of the things that probably cooked Harriet Myers's goose was in past speeches, she had talked about the Supreme Court and the judiciary in terms of kind of an activist bent. She talked about the court doing things. She didn't say legislating from the bench. And he is sending the signal he is not going to be an activist on the Supreme Court. Okay, so we've heard from Alito's opponents and those who are deeply concerned for a number of reasons about his appointment to the Supreme Court. Let's hear from some of his supporters, beginning with Senator Charles Grassley of Iowa. He's also a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And what he wants to talk about is the current makeup of the Supreme Court.
There are four known liberals on the Supreme Court, three known conservatives on the Supreme Court today. If Alito is conservative, and we won't know until after the hearing, then he would bring balance to the court.
That's a pretty smart way of putting it. It's going to change the complexion of the court. It will. It still won't make it an anti-Roe court. Mark my words. It will make it an anti-partial birth abortion court. It will change the balance enough. Replacing Sandra Day O'Connor with a pro-life judge. Let's just call him a pro-life judge. Replacing him with a pro-life justice does mean that at least on partial birth abortion, the court will swing against that procedure. Still one vote away from Roe, but hey, that's better than nothing. It will change the complexion of the court. Call it balance if you want to. Here's again, this is Senator Arlen Specter. Now, he is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here are his comments on Alito and Roe v. Wade.
There's nothing in his dissent which suggests disagreement with the underlying decision in Roe versus Wade.
So he's not concerned about this. It wouldn't make any difference if he did. Most likely it wouldn't make any difference if he did, because the court is still a pro-choice court. The majority of it is still a pro-choice court and a pro-Wade court. That's been proven by past reaffirmations of Roe. What it would is get us one vote closer to re-examining Roe v. Wade. It's all in the numbers. Finally, here's Senator Jim Talent of Missouri and his reaction to the Alito pick.
Judge Alito has had a distinguished career of service and has extensive legal experience. Of course, his record needs to be thoroughly vetted during the confirmation process, but he appears to be a highly qualified nominee. I've always said I would support the president's Supreme Court nominee, provided that the person's honest, has a strong record of accomplishment, and a consistent jurisprudence. Now, I agree with something Chief Justice Roberts said during his confirmation hearings. He said judges should interpret the rules when they are clear, like an umpire. Supreme Court justices should have a consistent standard which they follow case by case. I look forward to meeting Judge Alito and to the upcoming hearings, where everybody will have the opportunity to learn more about his record and background. As always, it's my hope that the Senate will avoid personal attacks during the confirmation process.
That's Jim Talent of Missouri. Let's talk with Steve, who calls from his car. Steve, welcome to Issues Etc.
I'm going to take you back to the prior. It's open line, so you're fair game. Ted Hagger's comment. I was streaming audio, listening to work, and to say that that Jesus did the easy part really burned me big time. I don't know, and I heard it the other day, and it still burns me. And the question I have is, I guess if Jesus did the easy part, we have to do the hard part, because Jesus he couldn't get it done all right the first time.
Yeah, that's exactly the reaction I had as well, Steve. He's bringing up a topic from the first hour of the program, our last hour of Open Lines, Ted Hagger's comment where he talks about they don't talk about sin in their church, because sin, that's the easy part. Jesus took care of that. We talk about living up to your destiny. Well, what Jesus did, he didn't, someone say, well, let's say Jesus did the hard part and we do the easy part. That's not right either. I don't think that's what Steve's saying. That's not right either. Jesus did the whole part. He didn't do a part, he did the whole thing once and for all. You know, and that's why those churches can, and thanks for bringing us back to that subject, Steve, that's why those churches can, if they're willing to, preach about sin and grace. And not shuffle, not check off the cross as though it's been done, been there, done that, now let's talk about what's really important to seekers. They need to remember it's not what seekers want, it's what sinners need. And they still need the whole thing Jesus did from beginning to end. When we come back, we'll talk with Dr. Nathan Jastrom about the image of God and bioethics.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.